Hello, everyone. It's DJ Hacksaw here. Starting a bit early today, as usual. I know usually my show starts at 1 p.m., but today we are starting early because I can take over the radio now. It's magic. So today I am unveiling the mask on one of Laurier's most popular social media platforms, Humans of Laurier. It's based off the Humans of New York page that is very popular on social media, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. They have a whole bunch of stories about people in New York and around the world. But this is based off that, and they have, and the person behind it has many stories from different students around Laurier, from business students to languages students to music students, and it's a great time. So he's going to be on here very soon. But right, he's going to be here at 1 o'clock. But right now, we've got a local artist playing a little music for us here. We have Myth of Innocence with Miss Julie.
Any way of getting down. I haven't the courage to jump, but I can't.
That was Myth of Innocence with Miss Julie. I'm back here with the Bravo Sierra Hour. It's your favorite DJ, DJ Hacksaw. We are going to be having a very special guest on this hour. We're going to have the host of the Humans of New York Laurier page. If you haven't followed them yet, go follow them on Instagram. It's an amazing page where you can hear lots of fun stories from different students around Laurier, from business students to DJs at Laurier who have been linking with lots of different people around different clubs and things like that. It's really, honestly, one of my favorite pages behind, of course, Spotted at Laurier, which everyone loves. I've actually been featured on Spotted at Laurier a couple times, but that's beside the point. It's honestly a great, great time. And so you should definitely go follow him, and we'll be finding out more about him. Now here's another local artist, all the way from Cambridge. We have Judas by Beaton. And we're back, folks. So like I said before, I am having the host of the Humans of Laurier official Instagram page on. It's going to be a great time because we're going to be talking about what he does with his Instagram. And he has a great Instagram, honestly. It's one of my favorite things to see because he's had many stories of just students around campus. One of the stories, which I found entertaining, well, they're all honestly very entertaining just because, you know, they're all great students from Laurier. But one that I liked, he had this, I can't tell if it's DJ or whatever, but he said it was a student, a Vaffles. I don't know how to say his name, but he appears to be a DJ of sorts. And he said he always takes these amazing quotes from these students. He says, "I didn't really network too much in clubs, but as an international student, I networked more with the international office. I would go to their events, and how I found out about the, and that's how I found out about the market space." And then he goes on to talk about how he went to all these international meetings and stuff. It's just really cool to see all these stories. So he's going to be on really soon with just all how he gets his process done, how he became an amazing photographer, and how he got into the business of the Instagram in general. So he'll be on in a couple of minutes. Meanwhile, stay tuned. We have another song from Beaton here, Tired of Waiting. All right, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. I am here with Ash, the host, and I don't want to say, were you the creator of Humans of Laurier?
No, not the creator, but I was the person who took over, I should say.
All right. Mm-hmm. So what got you into Humans of Laurier? Because it's a really great story-sharing device for the students around Laurier. So what got you into that?
Well, I would say I learned about it first from the original movement, the Humans of New York. And then that spread to universities, it spread all over the world. So when I got into Laurier last year, I looked at the, I saw that universities had like Humans of Western, Humans of Waterloo. I was like, okay, maybe Laurier should have one too. But when I checked Humans of Laurier, I found that the last post was made over 2 years ago. So I was like, oh, maybe the person running it graduated. So I guess, so I took the opportunity. I contacted the page. I was like, hey, is somebody still running this? Like, I would love to be a part of it.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And from there on out, like, the person responded within 2 or 3 days and said, hey, like, we don't have any photographers anymore. We don't have any people because they graduated. So I was like, okay, can I take over? And they were like, for sure, go for it. And from there, it's been like a blast, you know?
So how do you find the people that you want to interview? Like, do they message you? Do you walk up to someone and say, hey, can I interview for you for my page? What's your process of that?
Well, I would say it's a good mix of both. Like, for example, a lot of it is spontaneous. I'll meet new people every week. I will go to new clubs. I will see, let's say if something's happening in the concourse, sometimes I'll interview people there if they have time. And sometimes I partner with, I partner with different movements. Like, for example, if something's happening in the concourse, I'll partner with an organization and promote them if they're promoting something good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So why do you think this is important for students in general?
I would say it is really important because I think it's important to see the diversity of different kind of students at, like, Laurier or in general. So what I mean by that is, I think what I learned right away was that everybody has such a complex and different lifestyle. Like, you may think that, oh, my life is kind of neat. I've been living all these years doing different things, but everybody's like that, and you realize, like, they're so talented. There's so many things that people put into the world, so I think it's important to share that.
Now, have you ever had a story that was, like, mind-blowing, like, wow, I didn't know someone could go through all that and come out like you, or just a story in general that was like, ooh, maybe I can't post that, might be too controversial or whatever?
I would say I haven't experienced the controversial part yet, but I would say even recently, I think about 2 weeks ago, I interviewed a student, right? I was just like, okay, this is just another student. But it turns out she was an exchange student from France who was here for, like, just the semester. So a 5-minute interview turned up to be a 45-minute conversation. And I learned all about France. I learned about, why she was here in the first place, what she thought about Laurier, and, like, the importance of traveling. Mm-hmm. So it's really unexpected, I would say.
Now, what is your ideal person to interview? Like, they have, like, just a story that snaps, or just someone that says, oh, yeah, I love Laurier, that sort of thing. What's your ideal person to interview?
I would say, in general, there's not too much of an ideal. Like, I would say some people are a little bit against it. Like, not everybody says yes, right? Not everybody wants to be on camera. Not everybody wants to be recorded. So it's like a 30% yes, 30% no to 70% yes ratio. Honestly, as long as they're open, as long as they're willing to talk, it goes well from there.
Now, you don't just do the Humans of Laurier thing. Mm-hmm. You also photographed some of the boxing clubs stuff. Now, they have a fight going on soon, you told me?
Yeah, so how that works is I'm actually a part of the boxing club, and I'm also a part of a new magazine called Generation Magazine, like Wilfrid Laurier University. So this year, like, usually the boxing club is just training, and we just train and every year, right? Mm-hmm. We don't usually go for a fight because that's kind of complicated, but this year we decided to have an actual fight with, like, Wilfrid Laurier fighters. So I think we're picking up to 3 fights, something like that, and then there'll be, like, a simulated press conference. So I'll be covering that as someone as part of the Generation Magazine of Laurier.
So is that, like, an actual card that they're putting on, like, okay, this is who's fighting who? Mm-hmm. You're going to sort of do a hype and everything?
Yes, of course, yeah. That's what the press conference is for. We're hoping to make it a big event. Dates are not confirmed, but we're thinking sometime in March, and there's going to be, like, merchandise, stuff like that.
And tell me more about this magazine that you're involved with, Generation X, was it?
Oh, Generation Magazine Laurier. So it recently was rebranded. It was under a different name. It was a magazine that was started, I think, last year, actually, it's basically like a fashion magazine for people that are a little bit different and, like, looking for a place to fit in with their different kind of fashion senses, etc.
Right.
And we're actually coming out with a printed book this year. Last semester, it was all online, but now we're going to print it out and, distribute it.
So what got you into photography? Because obviously a big part of what you do is just taking pictures. Well, I don't want to say just taking pictures because you're very good at it, but what got you into this sort of photography?
I would say what got me into photography is initially I've loved to always, like, observe people. I've always loved to see what was going on. I would, like, even in back in high school, I would sit at park benches and see, like, life going on for, like, 1-2 hours to see people going. So I was like, okay, maybe there must be a way to capture this kind of thing. So I thought, like, photography, that's pretty cool, right? But it is a bit of a hurdle at the beginning, especially if you don't know about photography, if you don't have the right equipment. So as soon as the university started, I got a DSLR, and then I looked for all opportunities as I could. Like, I did photo shoots with my friends, I joined the Laurier Photography Club, and I learned, and, like, opportunities came just like that. Like, I went from doing photo shoots for my friends to doing paid photo shoots to taking over Humans of Laurier, something I never thought I would be in charge of or be doing. Like, it's a dream come true.
So, as someone who, would you say you have a lot of knowledge of cameras? Because personally, I know diddly squat about them.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say is a good camera for beginners? Someone who, say, wants to take your path, but they don't really know about much about photography. What would you say is a good camera to start off, and how would you recommend someone start off in photography?
Well, I would say first, I shoot with Nikon. I should make that clear. And then there are two different types of cameras. Like, there's a crop filter camera versus a full-frame camera. A full-frame camera is the professional cameras that they use, like, in photo shoots and stuff like that. Those mm-hmm. can cost thousands of dollars for the body alone, let alone the lenses.
So not really something a student could buy, really.
Not at all, yeah. Especially not when they're starting out. So yeah. I would say a crop filter. Like, for me, mine was a bit expensive, too. I will say photography is a bit of a steep hike at the beginning. I think with my lenses and my camera, it was around $700-$800.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's something that I would say, before you buy a DSLR, I would say experiment with your phone. Like, before I started with the DSLR, I took pictures of landscapes, etc., with my phone itself. Like, there's a lot you can do just with that. You can change settings around just like you would do with the DSLR, though, like, it's not the same, but mm-hmm. you can get the kind of feel for it.
Right.
And then when you feel like, oh, this is pretty neat, like, I'm serious about this, then you can make a purchase. So I would recommend something like the Nikon D3300 or 3400, which is a beginner camera. I think it's around 500, 600, mm-hmm. something like that.
Now, where do you hope to go with the photography? Like, Humans mm-hmm. of New York page, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not Humans of New York, great page, but Humans mm-hmm. of Laurier, obviously mm-hmm. a great page, but I don't think personally, I don't think you're going to be, like, exploding
yeah,
worldwide with
course,
Humans of
yeah.
Laurier. Mm-hmm. Obviously, great page. I could see it going far. But where do you hope to go with your photography career?
That's a good question, actually. I would say you're right. Like, at the end of the day, Humans of Laurier will be something that stays with Laurier, and it'll only expand as far as the Laurier community.
Right.
So where I hope to go to photography, I should say, one thing I got from Humans of Laurier is, like, how should I say, I lost that kind of fear to approach strangers, if
right.
that makes sense. So in the photography world, that is really, really important. Like, you have to be confident in the way that you approach people, in the way that you, just even for pictures itself,
yeah.
because if you are tense, then you're not going to get a good photo from your subject, right? So to answer your question, I would say I would like to shoot for magazines later on. Like, I would like to shoot professionally for models, etc.
Now, what type of modeling, like, mm-hmm. when you say, I want to shoot for magazines, mm-hmm. I have a bit of a dirty mind. That I instantly think, you should not be shooting for Playboy, anything else. Now, what? Obviously, mm-hmm. that's probably not the route you want to be taking. What magazines would you ideally be wanting to shoot for?
I would say probably Playboy is interesting, I should say.
Yeah.
But, like, I would say maybe the ultimate goal would be something like Forbes or Vogue, something like that. Like, the kind of people that you would encounter from those kind of magazines would be high-profile people,
mm-hmm.
people that, like, have experienced different walks of life and then got there. Like, Vogue and Forbes is something I would say, you could say, oh, I've made it.
Yeah.
That's that kind of level.
You've
so
sort of, like, it's sort of like making it to the NHL for a hockey player. It's
exactly.
like, oh, I've made it to Forbes.
Yeah.
I've shot pictures of Elon Musk
yeah,
and all
exactly,
that stuff.
Right, yeah.
Who's one person that you would want to, like, take a picture of and then have a good conversation with afterwards?
That's a good question, too. I would say, you know, actually, Elon Musk is a good one. I would say either Elon Musk or somebody in the science community. I would say besides photography, I'm really interested in space science and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm looking for a way to connect my photography to space science. So Elon Musk would be a great example.
So Stephen Hawking, if he was still alive, God rest his soul, that'd be sort of like another one that you'd want to interview almost?
Of course, yeah. I think to have a conversation with him, if he was still alive, would be probably one of the greatest things. Like the kind of intelligence and the kind of mind he has, like that comes once in a century, you know? Yeah.
So on the topic of space science, do you think aliens exist? And if so, why?
I would say that's a good question, too. I would say I don't. I can't say that they do or like don't exist completely. Like I don't go around to people and go like, hey, like aliens exist, right?
Yeah.
Like you join me on my quest. But at the same time, like if you consider it, like we can't disprove that they don't either.
Yeah.
In fact, there could probably be a good chance that they do. Like the universe, that the world that we live in is so like vast and expansive. Like we are but a small part of trillions and trillions and trillions of planets and like galaxies, etc.
Yeah.
Like, so to say that we are the only form of intelligent life in the entire system of like endless system would be a little bit
egotistical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, haha, we're so important. We're the only ones that are alive.
Yeah. Because, like, we're just carbon forms at the end of the day, right? Like,
yeah.
We're not, I would say, we're not, like, as special as we would think.
Yeah. Sure, we've done some cool stuff, but at the end of the day, we're just masses of carbon.
Exactly, yeah. Right?
Now, how do you think aliens would exist? Would they exist like us? Mm-hmm. Like, they've built buildings, they have different beliefs, stuff like that. Or would they be, like, small bacteria living in pools on another planet? What do you think?
I think that's a good question, too. I feel like there could be one of two scenarios. Like, maybe the first could be, like, a more explorative type. Like, for example, and the second could be, like, more of an, how should I say, a scarier type. So the first type, I would say, let's say they're just starting off on another planet. Like, we can't reach them because, like, they don't have the technology, nor do we have the technology to reach them. And then the second type would be, let's say, they do have that kind of technology. Like, they do have that kind of, those kind of resources, and it's only a matter of time before they find us, if that makes sense. Like, let's say NASA did send, like, a spacecraft full of, like, different human artifacts so that if aliens ever found it, like they could understand like our number system, our how we reproduce, how everything works for human systems, right? So I feel like that could go, as I said, one of two ways. The thing is, okay, maybe I should backtrack a bit.
Okay.
I feel like it could also be a different kind of thing too. Be like, you can think, oh, we as humans have lived on, like, Earth for this long, et cetera. We've built it up to how we are. We've already got to the stage of, like, VR, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So if we're the only ones, like, does that mean that there's, like, a cap? Like, for example, let's say another species, like, living on some random planet in the universe. If they built it up to a point and then they probably went farther than us, like, is there a cap where they just disappeared? Where
let's say, like, they got too technologically advanced and their entire society just exploded.
Collapsed, yeah, exactly. And if you think about it, like, even for human society, like, we've come so far in the past even 30 years, like, 40 years. 40 years ago, like, we were playing Pong. Like, we were literally hitting, like, a pixel across the screen. Now we have whole virtual reality, like, worlds or simulations.
Like, you can go into the medieval ages and kill a dragon
in
VR.
Yeah. And, like, you can go on the roller coasters and you feel like, oh, shoot, like, I am on that roller coaster, you know, or fly a helicopter, that kind of stuff. So that brings up a different question altogether. Like, maybe our world itself is like a simulator, you know what I mean?
Sort of like the Matrix almost.
Exactly.
So if you were in the Matrix, would you be like Neo and try to free everyone? If you knew, like, if you had taken the red pill, would you try to free everyone? Or would you be like Lucy or Cypher. Fun fact, antidote for the devil. His name is Louis Cypher. Lucifer.
Okay.
But I'm Crash. The Jesus reference in the Matrix. But would you be like Cypher, like, I know I'm in the Matrix, but I like it here because the world outside is complete garbage. which would you choose?
I think it goes along with a saying, right? I think at the end of the day, like, ignorance is bliss, right? Mm-hmm. Like, some people choose to, I mean, like, I'm not saying that that's real, right?
Yeah. But
I think it's easier to live knowing that, oh, okay, though things are different in real life, I can live in this, like, kind of fantasy. For me personally, I've always wanted to experience the truth, like, even if that is more of a dystopian kind of world. If I was in that scenario, I would definitely try to be the try to free them up, I should say, like, free up society, etc. Because, like, no matter what, I would feel like, as a whole, it's better to be living in something that's real rather than, like, a simulation or a fantasy.
Right.
Even now, if it is, like, a great fantasy.
Yeah. Like, The Matrix does seem pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's possible that eventually technology will overtake us in some regard, like Terminator-esque or Matrix-esque, or do you think that, oh, we'll always have control over it?
I think that's actually, in some ways, starting to happen already. Like, for example, let's take artificial intelligence, right?
Right.
So it's not to the point where it's like, Terminator, I'm going to eliminate you, et cetera.
Yeah.
I should say there's a difference between, there are two types, like, there's general intelligence and there is deep learning.
Right.
So what deep learning is, let me give you an example. I play chess, right, on the side.
Right.
And, like, there's a top chess player, Magnus Carlsen. So the way that works is there's, like, a FIDE rating, which is basically a chess rating. Like, if however good you are at chess, you go up on that scale. Let's say for Magnus Carlsen or grandmasters, they would be 2,400 or higher. I think he's 2,800, something like that.
Okay.
For comparison, I am 1,200 in terms of that. So he is, like, really,
he's
really up there.
Phenomenal. Like the Usain Bolt of chess.
Exactly, yeah. And now let's take that to deep learning algorithms. So already, like, computers could beat, like, humans no matter what. I think that line was crossed in the 90s, something like that.
Yeah.
When AI versus Garry Kasparov, like, the first, like, a grandmaster of chess.
Yeah.
And then, however, recently, there's Google's AI that's called DeepMind. It was recently able to beat even, like, the current, how should I say, another AI called Stockfish within 4 hours. Like, Stockfish plays millions of games and then analyzes millions of positions per second and is able to make, like, the best mathematically, like,
sound move.
Exactly.
Okay.
But for this, so it would, like, it was like, how should I say, there was a difference because it was like playing against a computer.
Right.
So what that meant is that they would not play like it's human. Like, if you played a game against it, you'd be like, oh, what is this kind of move? Like, this doesn't make sense to a human. However,
right.
DeepMind, Google's AI, recently came up with a chess program that played like a human. Like, it was given the rule set of chess. It was given, like, okay, this is how you move the king, this is how you move the pieces, etc.
Right.
Within 4 hours, it learned how to play chess, and it destroyed, like, Stockfish, which was the previous AI.
That was sort of the top AI for chess.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if you think about chess, that's more of a, how should I say,
strategic?
Yeah, a strategic game, but, like, it's mathematically sound, so maybe some people will go, like, oh, that's just chess, that's not anything bad. However, this expanded to StarCraft, which is in StarCraft 2, I think it's a very popular game, but it's known for its complicated tactics.
Yeah.
And it was thought that, oh, like, only human can play it properly. However, DeepMind can now beat, how should I say, the top StarCraft players as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So hours and hours and hours of gameplay, etc., was beaten by 4 hours or 5 hours of this AI's, like, ability to play.
So, just to round back, it's possible that eventually AI will be programmed to be smart enough to overtake humanity, just not in the Terminator-esque way that we think of it.
I think that depends on how we control it. Like, I should say it needs to be, as everything, like weapons, etc., it needs to be regulated. Without regulation, then I feel like it could take that kind of path, because we haven't expanded into general intelligence yet. We're still, like, machine learning algorithms, right?
We're still teaching the machines.
Exactly.
But the machines aren't learning on their own how to play chess.
Yeah, or even if they are, they don't know what chess is. They just know, like, I've been given this set of rules. How do we do this given this set of rules? They don't understand, like, victory, etc.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So, you said, going back to the boxing, how did you get involved with the Laurier boxing team? Did you box beforehand? Did you do any martial arts beforehand? Or was it just like, this sounds fun. Boxing's cool. All right, let's do it.
I will say, from a young age, I've always wanted to get involved in, like, martial arts. Like, for example, the first thing for me was karate.
Right.
But I was never able to, how should I say, find that kind of time. I had to, I went into instruments. At the end of the day, I didn't go into, like, martial arts.
Right.
And so that always stuck with me, though. I always wanted to learn some kind of martial art. So when I came to Laurier, I was like, oh, there's a boxing club here, right? And boxing is probably one of the most, how should I say, prolific, like, martial arts. It's really intense. It gives you that kind of workout, you know? Like, it's on par with something I would say, like, MMA and stuff like
that. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Because, like, karate is, like, years and years upon years of, like, training.
And memorizing certain moves and things like that. Yeah. Memorizing all those katas and stuff.
Yeah.
Which at the end of the day are kind of useless, but.
That's true. But, yeah. But for boxing, it's just something, it's there's, like, the jab, there's the cross, there's the uppercut, then there's, like,
hooks.
Of course, hooks, yeah.
And slipping, ducking, and all that stuff, yeah.
But it's not, like, too complicated, right? It just depends on your body movements. It depends on how fast you can learn, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And you can jump into it right away. So that's why I didn't have any previous experience with martial arts, but I jumped into boxing right away, and I haven't regretted a day of it.
Oh, yeah. And I find that if you didn't get a good boxer, like, it's very simple. Like you said, there's the jab, the uppercut, the cross, the hooks, all that. But if you didn't get, like, someone who's studied it for years and done the movement down, like Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao or something like that, they will school most normal people.
Yeah, that's true. And that's kind of interesting, too. I think there was a heavyweight boxing champion recently. I forgot his name. Deontay Wilder?
Deontay, yes.
Yeah. I think there was an interesting thing about him, too, because he was involved in another sport. I think it was basketball beforehand.
Yeah.
But then at 21, he was able to, I think that's something unique to boxing. Like, he was able to take up boxing, and he was able to beat top champions right away.
Mm-hmm.
Not due to his superior boxing ability. I wouldn't say, like, he's the best boxer, but due to his, like, really long arms, due to his powers, like.
And his athleticism, too.
Exactly.
Just from doing basketball in the past. Like,
yeah.
He was able to pick that up.
Exactly, right. And, like, he was able to immediately, like, how should I say? I think he was known for his one-punch knockouts. Like, even if the opponent was doing really well against him, like, he would end it with a single punch, you know? I think that's something unique to boxing. Like, for example, for other sports, you need to have that kind of years and years of technique, but boxing, everything can change in, like, a minute.
Yeah, you can be, like, it's the same with MMA. MMA and boxing are similar in that regard. Like, you can be winning the entire fight. It can be in the last round, last minute, and all of a sudden the guy hits you right on the boxer's button and you're down.
Exactly. Completely agree.
Mm-hmm. So, do you know, do you enjoy the sciences? Like, what's your degree in, first off?
I would say, well, my degree is in pure mathematics, but I'm going to go for, like, a minor in computer science and physics. So that's my kind of realm of expertise.
Right. So would you say you enjoy looking into the science of sports a bit and how the mathematics can engineer into sports, into photography, which is your special? Do you enjoy that? Or?
Of course, yeah. Like, I would say if you can break it down, I think the interesting thing is that, like, everything is math. Like, everything can be quantified from sports to photography, everything. Like, they have rules. Like, for photography, the rule of thirds, like, for sports, etc., your reach, etc., that can be quantified into numbers and how hard you can punch. Like, it's really interesting. That's why I took pure mathematics, because you can relate everything to math. If you keep that as your basis, you can really learn things in a, how should I say, in a way you haven't before. You can see things in a different kind of light. I would say even, like, the best, if you think about it, even, like, the best MMA fighters, etc., they're all, like, really smart guys. They're, like, all accountants. They're all, like, they have that kind of background behind them.
They all have that math or biology background that helps them understand what they're doing.
On a deeper level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's not just, like, oh, just punch, etc. Like, there's a lot more that goes into that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's that's why they call boxing the sweet science.
Exactly, yeah. completely agree.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be back with more interview right after this. Welcome back to another golden episode of the Bravo Sierra Hour. I'm here with Ash, the man behind Humans of Laurier. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that there are a lot of accounts like yours, but they aren't, you know, as in detailed as yours. Yeah. Like there's Humans of Wilson, mm-hmm. Humans of Laz. Would you ever consider a collaboration with those guys?
I think so. I would say definitely. The thing with Humans of Laurier is that it's been around like 2 years since it was like last active. So right. We are kind of smaller than before. Like people that used to follow it don't follow it anymore because they either like graduated or lost interest. So I would say for those kind of accounts, they're more active. Like it would definitely be something I would want to collaborate with, like even if we can make it into like one big movement and then have like subsidiaries, that would be nicer, I would say, like, and to bring that whole like Laurier community together.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if what would, in your perfect world, what would a collaboration between you three look like?
I would say I would want to start with like Humans of Laz, because that's, I think, the biggest of the three, like Humans of Laurier, Wilson. So what that would look like is I would want to probably approach the person running. I think the way they work is that they're not like a complete Humans of Laurier kind of thing. Like they post like one story of a student every week, but they primarily focus on things happening at Laz and the events, etc. So I would want to pair with the person working with Humans of Laz and then ask them to collaborate with Humans of Laurier and maybe like spread the word for Humans of Laurier, etc.
Right.
And then for that, that way I would get more exposure and I would bring more people back onto like the original movement, right? And then from there we could like expand and then we can reach all of Laurier rather than, because like Laz is just for mostly business students. It's not, it doesn't include everybody at Laurier.
Yeah, it's not involving the languages department.
Exactly.
The history
arts,
department.
Yeah.
The music department.
Mm-hmm. If it has a focus on business, etc. Which is great for like the students at Laz, but I feel like the greater community is more isolated or left out.
Just
know?
As not all of us are smart enough to get into business or mathematics like you.
No, not at all, not at all. It's just a matter of interest, right?
Right.
Yeah. Because for me, like I love mathematics, but I can't do bio at all. Like, I really try, but it really wasn't something that clicked. At the end of the day, it's just whatever clicks with you.
Yeah, and everyone has their own skills, right? Like,
exactly.
For you, you're an amazing photographer, mm-hmm. you're great at math,
mm-hmm.
but for me, I can't do that.
You have different skills,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You're in parts of different things. You're a part of different things, like Radio Laurier. That's your thing, you know?
I can interview people all day, and I can, and I know how to choke a man out in 3 different martial arts, so... That's
Whoa.
All I need to know.
Well, that's kind of interesting to hear. Like, what kind of martial arts are you part of?
I started off in karate, just like you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then I got my orange belt, and then they mm-hmm. switched places for the dojo. So I was like, ooh,
yeah.
I can't make it out to Kitchener every Monday.
Yeah.
Because I was like in grade 8, 9. I did karate from grade 8 to grade 9, and I was like, I can't make it out to Kitchener.
Yeah.
So then I went to my YMCA, and I did taekwondo and judo there.
Oh, whoa, okay.
And then I was like, you know what, taekwondo, mm-hmm. I got my blue belt in taekwondo, green belt in judo.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, you know what, this is fun.
Yeah.
But then I saw UFC 1,
mm-hmm.
and there was this 160-pound guy called Royce Gracie,
yeah.
who beat everyone who was like 200 pounds plus with Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I want to learn that, please. So I just walked into this gym called Mass Martial Arts.
Okay.
And they taught Brazilian jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai.
Oh, wow.
So then I went in there, I was like, teach me. They're like, do you have any martial arts experience? I was like, I've done judo, taekwondo, karate. They're like, okay, sweet. And also in middle school, I did a bit of wrestling. But,
oh, wow.
You know.
I think that's an interesting question. Like, how would you say something like Brazilian jiu-jitsu compares to wrestling or judo?
Well, judo is actually the parent martial art of jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happened was, I forget who taught it, someone taught it to a Japanese guy, because that's where Jew is from. A Japanese guy taught it to a Korean.
Okay.
And then he was like, this is good, because judo is primarily a throwing sport, whereas jiu-jitsu is more on the ground. So he was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Koreans sort of honed it so it was more on the ground, rolling around submissions.
Okay.
Then they brought it over to Brazil and taught it to the Gracie family.
Okay.
The Gracie family made it so that smaller people like myself mm-hmm. could go in and say, okay, here's a 265-pound guy who's trying to kick my butt. I want to know how to defend myself. And then they're like, okay, well, they modified it so that they could defend themselves.
Yeah.
Then they made the UFC.
Oh, wow.
And we got from there.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Wrestling is also very good. If you want to become an MMA fighter or just a more complete fighter, I would mm-hmm. say boxing, wrestling, and kickboxing are probably your three martial arts that you want to train in.
Yeah?
Yeah, just because if you get a great boxer who also knows some wrestling,
mm-hmm.
you're set. Or a great wrestler who knows some who knows how to throw a hook and a jab
Fair, yeah.
and all that stuff, then
yeah.
it's not, you don't have a hard time being that person.
Yeah. So you wouldn't say BJJ or like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
I'd say like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, after you have a basic understanding of takedowns
mm-hmm.
and maybe like you know how to do an armbar, then I would say you want to go into Jiu-Jitsu.
Fair, fair.
But I wouldn't deter anyone from saying, okay, I don't know any martial arts.
Yeah.
I want to learn a martial art. I'd say, yeah, go for it. If you want to do Jiu-Jitsu, go right ahead.
Yeah.
I ain't stopping you. It's a great martial art. You can learn how to kill people with your bare hands.
Fair, yeah.
Like, but I mean, also I would say, but mm-hmm. if you want to become a MMA fighter
okay.
and not
okay.
just, you know, defend yourself, but fight
yeah.
in a cage with other people, I'd say boxing, wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and kickboxing, any form of kickboxing, Muay Thai, Taekwondo, anything like that.
Fair.
Those yeah. are your bases for MMA, UFC, that sort of thing.
Fair, yeah. Hey, I'm a third of the way there.
Yeah, you're like almost there. If we had
yeah.
a Laurier wrestling team, you are set, my friend.
Yes. Oh, man.
Would you ever consider going into that sort of thing? Like maybe yeah. being an MMA photographer?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Like, I would say if the opportunity exists, like, I'd go for it. Even for the boxing fight, right?
Yeah.
I want to cover that. I want to, how should I say, I want to make sure I can cover the press conference and the fight itself. I
mm-hmm.
think that would be really interesting. So if Laurier gets more of those opportunities, then for sure, like, I all but encourage it, you know?
Now, do you know who's going to be fighting on that boxing card?
Not right now, I would say. That's going to be confirmed in a couple of weeks, I should say. It's not like completely confirmed, but
right.
the idea is there.
Okay. And do you have any people that you would definitely want to see go out there from Laurier Boxing Club and just brawl it out with someone
mm-hmm.
else?
Oh, for sure. Like, I would say the neat thing about the boxing club is that there are people of all kinds of sizes. Like,
right.
there are people that are 100 and there are guys that are 100, like 10 pounds versus
yeah.
a guy that I think there was a guy that was 6'3 or 6'4. He was like 200 plus pounds. So.
Whew.
And to see, and those are different kinds of fights too, right?
Yeah.
Like the smaller guy, it's not like it's worse. It's just like
they're more technical and stuff.
Technical, yeah, and faster. Like he's
yeah.
so much faster. But when you see like the big guy slug it out, you go like, oh, what am I even doing in like boxing?
Like
it is so,
ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And like that's the importance of weight classes too, right?
Oh yeah.
One person actually, or it's really easy to get like concussions, etc. You know?
Oh yeah.
I saw that happen. Like, I got, one person got knocked out, you know?
Yeah.
And then he got, like, a concussion. Not through boxing, not through Laurier boxing, but, like, in general. Like
yeah.
That's the importance. It's kind of different, like, the stylistic differences between, like, heavyweights and lightweights. It's really
yeah.
neat to see.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, CTE with concussions is, like,
oh,
so big right now. Like, with that new movie with Will Smith that came out a couple of years ago, the football concussion.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, after that, I feel like football,
yeah.
boxing, MMA, they were like, ooh,
yeah.
maybe we should make this a bit safer.
Exactly. Oh, that's a neat note, too, because I actually do football photography, too, for, like, Laurier's football team.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, I have it today as well, like, after, and like, 3 to 5, et cetera, they always practice. And
right.
it's neat to see, like, the different kind of athleticism there too. Like I'm a boxer, I may go like, oh, this is really hard, this is really hardcore, and it is, right?
Yeah.
It's not like it's easy.
It's not like any schmuck off the street can just walk in and say, I'm gonna be a pro boxer, come
exactly.
at me.
Exactly, exactly. But then you realize, oh, that's the same thing for like football too, because like
yeah.
maybe it's not like a complete combat sport, but the kind of injuries you can get from football and like can rival boxing or maybe even outclass boxing sometimes.
Oh yeah.
Because, like, you have 200-pound plus guys just running at each other, like...
Full force.
Exactly. And so that can really mess you up, especially with, as you said, like, CTE. And
yeah.
But, yeah, like, overall, it's a really interesting sport. Like, to see how, like, the players' seriousness, like, to see their kind of motivation towards football, and to see like the whole, like boxing's a solo sport, right? Yeah. It's not like a
like
team kind of sport.
You could have a team backing you that's training you, but at the end of the day, if you don't perform, it's on you.
Exactly, right? You're the one fighting in the ring. You're the one representing yourself. But if you think about football, that's like a movement. That's like a team effort. Like everybody has to be, you're only as good as like the weakest member on your team, right?
You're all moving as a unit. You are all one. If one of you fails, your entire team is just screwed.
Exactly, yeah. That's completely true. Like, so to see the differences between boxing and, say, football, it's really neat, you know? Like, it shows, like, how much diversity there is just in, like, the athletic world itself.
Oh, yeah. And I actually had one of the football players on a couple weeks ago. He's actually runs Hot Talks. It's another show on Laurier. Jonathan Salfari. I don't know if you ever met him.
I don't think I know him by name, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, and he was talking about the intense training that those guys go through. Like, he was telling me, like, the first time he tried out, he had to wake up, like, 6 a.m., come from Cambridge to Waterloo in order to do, like, a 7:30 training. And it is intense.
I got to agree. Like, even if I were to compare it, I would say that football training is probably worse than, like, boxing training, at least at this kind of level. Like,
Yeah.
Because, like, oh, my God, like, they go
hard.
Yeah.
Now, between boxing and – I know you said that boxing, football might surpass boxing as far as injuries go, but which would you say is more dangerous in the long run? Like, I know we've seen damage on both sides, but for the brain and stuff, like concussions, what do you think is more dangerous, football or boxing?
Oh, maybe I would say overall – that's a good question. Well, I would say probably boxing, because football – is really bad, and especially they're starting to see it now, like cases of CTE popping up in older players.
Yeah.
And it's only getting worse with how they're training. It's like they're going harder and harder, right? So it's becoming more of a commonplace. But if you think about boxing, what's more common boxing? Like, the thing is, with football, primarily your end goal is to get a ball to the other side of the field, right?
Yeah. Or like it's not to hurt the other guy.
Exactly. That happens in the process, but that's not the main goal.
Right.
And there are penalties for, like, if you severely injure people.
Yeah.
For boxing, your main goal is to get points and, like, knock out the other player.
Yeah.
Right? So with boxing, the thing is, it also, it has the CTE. It has those kind of brain injuries. On top of that, there are spontaneous severe injuries. Like, for example, let's say there was a case, I think, a couple years ago where, or even I think there was a case this year as well. Like, there was a Montreal boxer.
Sure.
And then a fighter fought against him. And then with one punch, he put him into a coma. Like, he was a experienced fighter. He knew what he was doing, et cetera. But still, he got put into a coma with that one punch. Like, with boxing, it's really easy for things to change just to, like, the snap of a finger.
Oh, yeah.
And especially, and there was another case a couple years ago where the person was fighting him, like a person was fighting another person, and then with one punch he was put into a childlike state. Like, he was a renowned boxer. He had, like, that kind of experience. He was known as, like, oh, an upstart, like, he can change things, etc.
Right. But he's gonna change the sport.
Exactly, yeah. And, like, an ace of, like, the boxing world. But with one punch, like, he was put into a childlike state. He was like, oh, I have a headache, like, something's wrong. And then he stopped fighting, and then after a couple days it got much worse. He got put into a coma. Then when he got out of that coma, he was no more than four, like, mentally.
Like, he couldn't, like, his whole life function at all as, like, a regular human being.
Exactly, yeah. He was functioning as, like, a four-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And even if you see, like, the greats, like, let's say Muhammad Ali, like, for him, like, there's no parallel, of course.
Like, yeah, like, he was greatest of all time.
The greatest, right? That's what they call him. Like, even for other sports, they recognize him as the greatest.
Yeah.
For his work inside and outside of boxing. But besides that, if you look at the difference between him in his prime versus him in his later years, you can see, of course, he had, like, Parkinson's, but, like, boxing really accelerated that. Like, he was such a charismatic guy, right? Like, he would always ace the interviews. Everybody
best
loved to talk.
Trash talker in the world. Like, any trash talker nowadays in sports has some influence from him.
People love to hate him, but, like, now he's only known for, like, the legend that he was, right? But if you compare that to, let's say, his 2000s interview, etc., like interviews he did like recently before he passed away, there's really such a difference, you know, like even with the way he's shaking, the way he's not able to answer. Somebody who had like the fast, like 1 second punch could barely do that in like his old age, you know, like it's really, it's scary to see it, I would say, you know?
Yeah. Although my favorite Muhammad Ali quote of all time, he was, I forget who he was, I think it was Joe Frazier, he was fighting, and he says, if he even dreams of beating me, he better wake up, come to my house, and apologize. I was just like, when I saw that clip, I was like, well, damn. Okay, then.
He was so creative, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, trash talk meant, like, a whole different level for him.
Oh, yeah. And, like, you see guys nowadays, like, they're just popping off swear words, every other word and stuff. But I don't think he ever swore once, yet he has some of the best insults of all time, and it's just great.
And, like, things that actually got to their opponent, right? Like, it's easy to say, like, F you, whatever, right?
But
the thing is, like, it doesn't get to the person. They just go, like, okay, I'll brush this off, whatever. But in comparison to Muhammad Ali, like, the things that he said, they stuck with people.
Yeah.
It, what was his famous quote? Like,
float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
George can't hit what his eyes can't see. That was his famous fight against
George Foreman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that stuck with Foreman, like, his whole like career, you know.
Then he knocks out all his kids and starts making. Then Muhammad Ali knocks him out and he starts making barbecues. So it's like,
exactly. Oh man, so it's just like for him, like that's why he's known as the greatest, right?
Oh yeah, he was everything. He was so good with his words, but at the same time, he was able to back it up. Like the equivalent I would draw today is like Conor McGregor in MMA.
Fair, yeah.
Like he's a good trash talker. Granted, swears a bit more than Mayweather and probably drinks a bit more whiskey, but he's a phenomenal fighter, and he's able, and he'll turn around, like in a press conference, I don't know if you saw this, but he was talking, and then this other guy calls him out and says, you know where the real fight is, just back here.
Oh, yeah.
Conor McGregor just turns around and says, who the beep is that guy? And at that moment, he just decimated that guy's career.
That's true. Actually, that's an interesting point. On that note, what do you think of the recent fight of Conor McGregor versus Khabib?
Oh, that one. You see, I'm a fan of both fighters.
Okay.
I love Conor McGregor because he's been trash talking back it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Khabib, but he will just stare at you and steal your soul when he wrestles you. Mm-hmm. Like, in jiu-jitsu, we call it stealing your soul. I can just lie on you and you make a little sound like, and that's the moment. I steal your soul. Khabib is phenomenal at that.
Yeah.
So as much as I wanted Conor to win, I was like, okay, Khabib's just going to take him down and just wrestle him to death.
Fair, yeah.
So I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. I sort of saw that. When he lost, I was like, sort of saw that coming, unfortunately. Yeah. But what about you? Are you a big MMA guy? Or?
Yeah. Recently, I would say, especially when I got into boxing.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the Khabib versus Conor fight, that was an interesting point for me, too, because, like, it shows different sides of the sport. Like,
oh, yeah.
If you see Conor's approach, like,
very loose.
Yeah, and no matter where you go, like, you can't see, like, people love to hate him, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, no matter what, like, you can say you love Conor, you hate Conor, but you can't ignore Conor.
No, oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to describe it. Like, you can love him or hate him, but you can't ignore him no matter what.
Exactly. And, like, for Khabib, he takes, like, the opposite approach. There is no, like, at least, maybe not in this fight, but there's no trash talking from him in general. He goes like, this is a gentleman's sport. We should act like with respect.
We should respect each other. Mm-hmm. And another great guy I think for that was George St. Pierre.
Oh, of course.
Like he would come in with a suit, dressed all classy. Even with his fight against Michael Bisping, he still wore a suit, was such a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need a mix of both in like boxing and in MMA. Like we need the trash talkers, of course, because those guys still have a fight, but still need the gentlemen because it's a gentleman's sport.
Completely agreed.
Now, which would you say, do you have a preference, MMA or boxing, or do you like both equally?
I would say that's, I think the cool thing about MMA, well, I think we can't compare them, like, fighting-wise. I would say an MMA fighter will 100% beat a boxer every time. You're, like, given a free fight, like, not a boxing fight. Like
in non-restricted rules, like a street fight.
Yeah. Not like Conor McGregor versus, like, Mayweather.
Yeah, which we saw, and Mayweather just kicked his butt around the ring.
Of course, because, like, no matter what, like,
Because Floyd's a phenomenal boxer, exactly. And Connor's an MMA fighter, so...
Exactly, yeah.
Obviously, Floyd's going to win.
Mm-hmm. But if Floyd came to Octagon, that's a different story.
Yeah, now you're in Connor's world. He can take you down. He can leg kick you. He can do all that stuff.
Yeah. And the cool thing about MMA is that it's more of a recent movement, right? Like, if you think about boxing, it's been around for, I think, 100 years, something.
Ago, over 100 years,
exactly. And MMA is more, I think, at least...
It started in 1995, yeah, so just over 20 years old. Yeah.
It's very recent, right? But it's exploded in popularity because I think the coolest thing about MMA is just to see how easily somebody can turn things around. And not only that, but utilize their previous fighting background. Like with boxing, of course, you're just going to have two very technical boxer fighters, and whoever is the better boxer wins.
Yeah, who's the best with their hands.
Exactly. If they get a lucky break, then that's good for them.
Yeah.
But with MMA, it's just like some people come with a karate background, some people come with like Shaolin, like Kung Fu, you know?
Some guys come with a wrestling background, some come with jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm. And to put that all into one sport and go like, hey, like you learn whatever you want to learn, and then you use it on the fighting day, that's really interesting. I would say like a more of an evolution of the sport. Like boxing is more of a stationary thing. It's probably the biggest combat sport, but it's not going to evolve further. But if you think about MMA, it's always constantly evolving, like constantly changing.
Like in the beginning, it was just different disciplines, like a wrestler versus a boxer.
Exactly.
But now it's like a wrestler / boxer / jiu-jitsu fighter against the karate / kung fu / judo fighter.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, when the person loses, they go, like, let's say it was a judo person against a BJJ person. Just, like, in terms of, like, example. And then he loses against a BJJ person goes, like, oh, shoot. Like, it's not like boxing where it's just, like, oh, I got to train harder. I got to, like, throw my crosses, like, harder.
But so
it's
more like faster, stuff like that.
Yeah. But in MMA, it's more like, hey, the way he took me down, they don't have that in judo. I'm going to incorporate that into my training and make sure this never happens again.
That way I can defend against it in the future and become a better fighter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the coolest thing about MMA, the thing that stands out, is the cross-application of disciplines. You know? Yeah. Like, if you're a good boxer, you can mix that in with Muay Thai, and then you can be, like, a good kickboxer as well. And then
you can learn a little wrestling, and it's like, oh, suddenly you're winning belts and taking over the world.
Yeah. So it's really, it's like a constantly evolving sport. I think with Khabib's win over Conor, we'll see more wrestling-oriented moves like for Conor, et cetera. You know?
And then a good boxer come along and he'll sort of knock out Khabib, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see more of boxing incorporated.
Exactly. And then it's forever evolving into like a better sport. I'm really excited to see what MMA will become.
Yeah. Well, I love talking to you. Unfortunately, we are going to have to wrap it up. We've got another show coming on soon, and he needs to set his stuff up. Any last words you want to get out to the folks?
I would say thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed this talk. And for any of you viewers or listeners out there, follow Humans of Laurier. We have great things coming up, and it's only going to get better.
And they have already great stories on there, so if you missed a post, you can go back there and read all the amazing stories on that. Loved having you on, Ash.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
See you next week, folks.